Hello, everyone. We are continuing on with Thomas Manton's A Practical Exposition of the Lord's Prayer. And we're still in the introduction, and the verses he started with were Matthew 6, verses 6 through 8. But thou, when thou prayest, enter into thy closet, and when thou hast shut the door, pray to thy Father, etc. And in a previous part, we went through a couple of points. There's a supposition concerning solitary prayer that you do that. The second point, direction about it, enter into your closet, shut the door, and pray to the Father, which is in secret. And then the third point, which we did last time, which was encouragement to perform it, and thy Father, which seeth in secret, shall reward thee openly. And that's where we left off. It brought us up to an application section, which is where we left off last time. And Lord willing, we're going to continue on with that for this reading. And I'll go ahead and begin. Again, the section is called Application. And Mr. Manton says, use number one, to reprove those which neglect closet addresses to God, they wrong God and themselves. They wrong God because this is a necessary part of the creature's homage, of that duty he expects from them to be owned not only in public assemblies, but in private. And they wrong themselves because it brings in a great deal of comfort and peace to the soul when you do perform the duty, and many sweet and gracious experiences there are which they deprive themselves of, and a blessing upon all other things. But more particularly to show the evil of this sin by not doing that. Number one, it is a sin of omission, and these sins are very dangerous, as well as sins of commission. Natural conscience usually smites more for sins of commission than for sins of omission. To wrong and beat a father seems a more heinous and unnatural act than not to give him due reverence and attendance. We are sensible of sins of commission. We sense them much easier. But yet God will charge sins of omission as well as commission. But yet God will charge sins of omission as well as commission upon you. And so will conscience also, when it is serious, when against the plain knowledge of God's will, you can omit such a necessary part of God's worship. James 4:17, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. That is, it will be sin with a witness. Conscience will own it so when it is awakened by the word or by providence or great affliction or cast upon your deathbed. How will your own hearts reproach you then that have neglected God and lost such precious hours as you should have redeemed for communion with him? Sins of omission argue as great a contempt of God's authority as sins of commission, for the same law which forbids a sin does also require a duty from us. And sins of omission argue as much hatred of God as sins of commission. If two should live in the same house and never speak to one another, it would be taken for an argument of as great hatred as to fight one with another. So when God is in us and round about us, and we never take time to confer with him, it argues much hatred and neglect of him. And sins of omission are an argument of our unregeneracy as much as sins of commission. A man which lives in a course of drunkenness, filthiness, and adultery, you would judge him to be an unregenerate man, and that he has such a spot on him as is not the spot of God's children. So the spot on him shows that he's not one of God's child, or at least it evidences that. So to live in a constant neglect of God is an argument of unregeneracy as much as to live in a course of debauchery. The apostle, when he would describe the Ephesians by their unconverted state, describes it thus, Ephesians 2 verse 12, that they lived without God in the world. When God is not owned and called upon, and unless the restraints of men, the law of common education, and customs of nations call for it, they live without God. So Psalm 14 verse 1, they are corrupt, they have done abominable works, there is none that doeth good, they are altogether become filthy. Every unregenerate man is that atheist. There is some difference among unregenerate men. Some are less in the excess and gross outbreakings of their sins and folly. Some sin more, some less, but they all are abominable on this account because they do not seek after God. And the apostle makes use of that argument to convince all men to be in a state of sin, that they are in that state. Romans 3 verse 11, there is none that seeketh after God. The heart may be as much hardened by omissions, yea, sometimes more, than by commissions, as an act of sin brings a brawniness and deadness upon the heart, so does the omission of a necessary duty. Not only the breaking of a string puts the instrument out of tune, but it's being neglected and not looked after. Certainly by experience we find none so tender, so holy, H-O-L-Y, so humble, so, and heavenly, as they which are often with God. This makes the heart tender, which otherwise would grow hard, dead, and stupid. And stupid in these older writings, I believe, usually means like being in a stupor. Well, that was point one. We're talking about the evils of this sin. It is a sin of omission, and those are often very dangerous. Number two, it is not only an omission in general, but an omission of prayer, which is, first, a duty very natural to the saints. Prayer is a duty very natural and kindly to the new creature. When you're born again, the new creature is created, and that's natural to that creature. As soon as Paul was converted, the first news we hear of him, Acts 9 verse 11, behold, he prayeth. As soon as we are newborn, there will be a crying out for relief in prayer. It is the character of the saints. Psalms 24 verse 6, this is the generation of them that seek thee, a people much in calling upon God. And the prophet describes them by the work of prayer, Zephaniah 3 verse 10, my supplicants, and then Zechariah 12 verse 10, I will pour upon them the spirit of grace and supplication. Wherever there is a spirit of grace, it presently runs out into prayer. Look, as a preacher is so called from the frequency of his work in preaching, so a Christian is one that calls upon God. Everyone that calleth on the name of the Lord shall be saved, Romans 10 verse 13. In vain he is called a preacher that never preaches, so he is in vain called a Christian that never prays. As things of an airy nature move upward, so the saints are carried up to God by a kind of naturality when they are gracious. God has no tongue-tied or dumb children, being silent, dumb. They are all crying, Abba, Father. Then it is an omission of a duty which is of great importance as to our communion with God, which lies in two things, fruition and familiarity, in the enjoyment of God and in being familiar and often with Him. Fruition we have by faith, and familiarity is carried on by prayer. There are two duties which are never out of season, hearing and prayer, both which are a holy, H-O-L-Y, dialogue between God and the soul until we come to vision, the sight of Him in heaven. Our communion with God here is carried on by these two duties. We speak to God in prayer. God answers us in the Word. God speaks to us in the Word, and we return and echo back again to Him in prayer. Therefore, the new creature delights much in these two duties. Look, as we should be swift to hear, James 9, verse 19, until we come to seeing Him by sight in heaven, we should take all occasions and be often in hearing. So, in prayer, we speak to God, and therefore should be redeeming time for this work. In the Word, God comes down to us, and in prayer, we get up to God. Therefore, if you would be familiar and often with God, you must be much in prayer. This is of great importance. You know the very notion of prayer. It is a visiting of God. Isaiah 26:16, O Lord, in trouble have they visited thee. They poured out a prayer when thy chastening was upon them. Praying to God and visiting of God are equivalent expressions. Now, it argues very little friendship to God when we will not so much as come at Him. Can there be any familiarity where there is so much distance and strangeness as never to give God a visit? Point number three, it is the omission of personal and secret prayer, which in some respects should be more prized than other prayer. Partly because here our converse with God is more express as to our own case. When we join with others, God may do it for their sakes, but here, as Psalm 116, verse 1, I love the Lord because He hath heard my voice and my supplication. When we deal with Him alone, we put the promises in suit. We bring them like a lawsuit almost before Him, and may know more it is we that have been heard. We put God more to the trial. We see what He will do for us and upon our asking and striving. And partly, here we are more put to the trial. We are more put to the trial. What love we will express to our Father in secret when we have no outward reasons, no inducements from respects of men to move us. In public duties, which are liable and open to the observance of others, hypocrites may put forth themselves with great vigor, quickness, and warmth, whereas in private addresses to God, they are slight and careless, the hypocrites are. A Christian is best tried and exercised in private, in those secret intercourses between God and his own soul. There he finds most communion with God and most enlargement of heart. A man cannot so well judge of his spirit, his own spirit, and discern the workings of it in public, because other men's concernments and necessities, mingled with ours, are taken in, and because he is more liable to notice of others. But when he is with God alone, he has only reasons of conscience and duty to move him. When none but God is conscious of our own hearts, then we shall see what we do for the approbation of God and acceptance with him. And partly, in some respects, this is to be more prized because privacy and retiredness is necessary and is a great advantage that men's spirits may be settled and composed for the duty. Sinful distractions will crowd in upon us when in company, and we are thinking of this and that. How often do we mingle sulfur with our incense in our prayers, carnal thoughts in our worship, or I guess he says in this point, in our worship, mingling these carnal thoughts. How apt are we to do so in public duties? But in private, we are wholly or fully at leisure to deal with God in a childlike liberty. Now, will you omit this duty where you may be most free without distraction to let out the heart to God? And partly because a man will not be fit to pray in public and in company, which does not often pray in secret. He will lose his savor and delight in this exercise and soon grow dry, barren, sapless, and careless of God. Look, as in the prophet Ezekiel, you read there that the glory of the Lord removed from the temple by degrees. It first removed from the holy place, H-O-L-Y, then to the altar of burnt offerings, then to the threshold of the house, then to the city, then to the mount, which was on the east side of the city. There the glory of the Lord stood hovering a while, as loath to be gone, to see if the people would get it back again. This seems to be some emblem and representation of God's dealing with particular men. First, God is cast out of the closet. Private intercourses between God and them are neglected. And then he is cast out of the family, and within a little while, out of the congregation. Public ordinances begin to be slighted and to be looked upon as useless things. And then men are given up to all profaneness and looseness and lose all, so that religion, as it were, dies by degrees, and a carnal Christian loses more and more of the presence of God. And therefore, if we would be able to pray in company, we must often pray in secret. Point number four. Consider the mischief which follows neglect of private converse with God. Omissions make way for commissions. If a gardener withholds his hand, the ground is soon grown over with weeds. Restrain prayer and neglect God, and noisome lusts will abound. And lusts are just more generally any corrupt desire in your heart. Our hearts are filled with distempers when once we cease to be frequent with God in private. It is said of Job, chapter 15, verse 4, "Thou restrainest prayer before God." That passage is notable in Psalm 14, verse 4, "They eat up my people as they eat bread and call not upon the Lord." Omit secret prayer and some great sin will follow. Within a little while, you will be given up to some evil course or other, either brutish lusts, oppression, or violence, to hate the people of God, to join in a confederacy with them which cry up a confederacy against God. The less we converse with God in private, the more is the awe of God lessened. But now, a man which is often with God dares not offend him so freely as others do. As they which are often with princes and great persons are better clothed and more neat in their apparel and carriage, so they which are often conversing with God grow more heavenly, holy, H-O-L-Y, watchful than others are. And when we are not with God, not only all this is lost, but a great many evils to be found. It is plainly seen by men's conversations, and that generally means your general behavior of life. It includes what you say, I believe, but it also means your behavior, how you behave. So it is plainly seen by men's conversations or behavior and what they say, and how little, or it's seen by that, how little they do converse with God. But now, to avoid the stroke of this reproof, what will men do? Either deny the guilt or excuse themselves. First, some will deny the guilt. They do call upon God and use private prayer, therefore think themselves to be free from this reproof. Yea, but are you as often with God as you should be? There are three sorts of persons. Number one, some there are that omit it totally. They cannot speak of redeeming any time for this work. These are practical atheists without God in the world, Ephesians 2, verse 12. They are heathens and pagans under a Christian name and profession. So he's talking about people who actually profess to be Christians. So if for all intents and purposes, they are practical atheists. He continues, we should pray without ceasing. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 17. That is, take all praying occasions. Therefore, they which pray not at all the week long, God hears not from them, surely come under the force of this reproof. Number two, there are some which perform it seldom. Oh, how many days and weeks pass over their heads, and God never hears from them. The Lord complains of it. Jeremiah 2, verse 32, they have forgotten me days without number. It was time out of mind since they were last with God. And number three, the most do not perform it so often as they should. And therefore, that I may speak with evidence and conviction, I shall answer the case, what rules may be given, how often we should be with God, and when we are said to neglect God. Number one, every day something should be done in this kind. Acts 10 verse 2, Cornelius prayed to God always. Every day he had his times of familiarity with God. Daniel, though with the hazard of his life, would not omit praying three times a day. Daniel 6 verse 10. And David speaks of morning, evening, and noon, Psalm 55, verse 17. Though we cannot bind all men absolutely to these hours, because of the difference of conditions, employments, and occasions, yet thus much we may gather from hence, that surely they which are most holy, H-O-L-Y, will be most frequent in this work. Number two, love will direct you. They which love one another will not be strange one to another. A man cannot be long out of the company of him whom he loves. Christ loved Lazarus and Mary and Martha, John 11, verse 5, and therefore his great resort was to Bethany, to Lazarus's house. He often resorted there. Surely they which love God will have frequent recourse to him. In the times of the gospel, God trusts love. We are not bound to such particular rules as under the law. Why? For love is a liberal grace and will put us upon frequent visits and tell us when we should pray to God, versus a strict letter of a law indicating when we might need to pray. Point number three, the Spirit of God will direct you. There are certain times when God has business with you alone, when he does, as it were, speak to you as to the prophet in another case, Ezekiel 3, verse 22, go forth into the plain in the desert, and there I will talk with thee. So get you to your closets. I have some business to speak with you. Thou saidst, seek ye my face. My heart answered, thy face, Lord, will I seek. Psalm 27, verse 8. God invites you to privacy and retirement. You are sent into your closet to deal with God about the things you heard from the pulpit. There is the actual prophet, P-R-O-F-I-T, that we get by a sermon when we deal seriously with God about what we have heard. When God sends for us, as it were, by his Spirit, and invites us into his presence by these motions, it is spiritual clownishness to refuse to come to him. Point number four, your own inward and outward necessities will put you in mind of it. God has not stated what hours we shall eat and drink. The seasons and quantity of it are left to our choice. God has left many wants or lacks upon us to bring us into his presence. Sometimes we want or lack wisdom and counsel in darkness. James 1, 5, if any lack wisdom, let him ask of God, which giveth to all men liberally. It is an occasion to bring us to God. God is the best casuist to resolve our doubts and guide us in our way. Sometimes we lack strength to withstand temptations. The throne of grace was set up for a time of need, Hebrews 4, verse 16, when any case is to be resolved and comfort to be obtained. We want or lack comfort, quickening, counsel, and all to bring us to God. So for outward necessities also, certainly if a man does but observe the temper of his own heart, he cannot neglect God, but will find some occasion or other to bring him into his presence, some errand to bring him to the throne of grace. We are daily to beg pardon of sin, and daily to beg supplies of graces and helps, I believe. Now, certainly, when you do not observe these things, you neglect God. So that was first, some will deny the guilt. And secondly, others, to avoid it, will excuse themselves. Why, they would pray to God in private, but either they want or lack time, or they want or lack a convenient place, or want or lack parts and abilities. Parts are kind of like abilities. But the truth is, they want or lack a heart, and that is the cause of all. And indeed, when a man has no heart to the work, then something is out of the way. Number one, some plead they want or lack time. Why, if you have time for other things, you should have a time for God. Shall we have a season for all things, and not for the most necessary work? Do you have time to eat, drink, sleep, follow your trade, your trading? How do you else live? And no time to be saved? No time to be familiar with God, which is the greatest business of all? Get it from your sleep and food, or take it out from that time, rather than be without this necessary duty. Jesus Christ had no such necessity as we have, to a requirement to come to God, especially for things like sin and the like. Yet it is said, Mark 1, verse 35, he arose a great while before day and went out and departed into a solitary place and there prayed. Therefore, must God only be encroached upon, the lean kine devour the fat, Sarah thrust out instead of Hagar, and religion be crowded out by doors? That is a happy house where Martha complains of Mary. Martha, which was cumbered with much service, complained of Mary that she was at the feet of Christ, hearkening to his gracious counsel. But in most houses, Mary may complain of Martha. Religion is neglected and goes to the walls. So that was a lack of time. Number two, some want a place or lack a place. He that does not want or lack a heart will find a place. Christ went into a mountain to pray, and Peter to the top of the house. Number three, many say they want or lack parts or abilities. They cannot tell how to pray. Wherefore or why has God given his Spirit? In one fashion or other, a man can open his case to God. He can go and breathe out his complaints. The Lord will hear breathings. Go, chatter out your requests to your Father. Though you can but chatter like a crane, yet do it with fervency and with a spirit of adoption. We have not only Christ given us for an advocate, but the Holy Ghost to help our infirmities. He has given us the Spirit of his Son, whereby we may cry, Abba, Father. Galatians 4, verse 6. A child can acquaint a father with his wants or lacks. That was use number one, which was to reprove those which neglect closet addresses to God. They wrong God and themselves. Use number two, to exhort God's children to frequency in this duty and to much watchfulness and seriousness in the performance of it. First, to frequency. For arguments, again, to press you, number one, it argues more familiarity to pray to God alone than in company. He that goes to a prince alone and upon all occasions has access to him in private, when company is gone, has nearer friendship and a greater intimacy with him than those which are only admitted to a speech with him in the company of others. So the oftener you are with God alone, the more familiar. He loves to treat with you apart, as friends are most free and open to one another when they are alone. Number two, then you will have a more sensible answer of your own prayers. You might be able to sense them more. You will see what God has done upon your requests. Daniel 9:21-22. Daniel was praying for the church, and an angel comes and tells him, "It is for thy prayers and supplications that I am come." Therefore, surely a man would take some time to go and plead the promises with God. But further, by way of means, number one, consider the omnipresence of God, which is the argument in the text. He is in secret, he seeth in secret. If men were convinced of that, they would make conscience of secret prayer. Look, as Jesus Christ says of himself, John 16:32, "You leave me alone, and yet I am not alone, for the Father is with me." So when you are alone, you are not alone. There is a Father in secret, though nobody to see and hear, yet God is there. We are apt to think all is lost, which men are not conscious to, and done in their sight. Acts 10:4, "Thy prayers and thine alms are come up for a memorial before God." Come up for a memorial before God. God keeps a memorial of your private prayers. There is a register kept in heaven, and never a prayer lost. Number two, consider the excellency of communion with God. Jeremiah 2:32, "Can a maid forget her ornaments and a bride her attire?" Women are very curious and careful of their ornaments and will not forget their dressing attire, especially a bride upon the wedding day, she that is to be set forth in most costly array. She makes it her business to put on jewels to be seen in all her glory. God is as necessary to us as ornaments to a bride. We should be as mindful of communion with God as a bride of her dressing ornaments. "Yet they have forgotten me days without number." Whatever is forgotten, God must not be forgotten. Point three, make God a good allowance. Resolve to be much in the practice of it. It is best to have set times for our religious worship. For persons which are sui juris, the Latin words, at their own dispose, it is lawful and very convenient to dedicate a certain part and portion of our time to the Lord of time. Lazy, idle, I-D-L-E, servants must be tasked and required to bring in their tail of brick, so it is good to task the heart to make God a fair and reasonable and convenient allotment of some part of our time. David had his fixed hours. "Three times a day will I call upon thee." And Daniel had his set times. He prayed three times a day. Though we cannot charge you to observe these hours, yet you should make a prudent choice yourselves and consecrate such a part of time as will suit with your occasions, your course of life, according to your abilities and opportunities. It is an expression of love to God to give him somewhat that is your own. It will be of exceeding profit, P-R-O-F-I-T, to you, profit to you, and make your communion with him more seasonable and orderly. This will make you careful and watchful how you spend your other hours, that you may not be unfit when times of prayer come. 1 Peter 1 Peter 3, verse 7, husbands, dwell with your wives according to knowledge, that your prayers be not hindered. But do not propose a task too great for your strength, and perplex yourselves with such an unreasonable allowance as will not suit with your occasions. Men create a trouble to themselves and bind themselves with chains of their own making when they propose more duty than they can well discharge. So don't overpromise yourselves in this duty, but do what you can and what is reasonable and with a heart of love to God. Now he has a subsection, the second part of the use. He says, do it seriously with caution and warily. Here Christ gives direction. When thou prayest, enter into thy closet and shut thy door, and then think of thy Father which is in secret. We need a great deal of caution. For, number one, when you shut the door upon all others, you cannot shut the devil out of your closets. He will crowd in. When you have bolted the door upon you and shut other company out, you do not lock out Satan. He is always at hand, ready to disturb us in holy duties, H-O-L-Y. Wherever the children of God are, he seeks to come at them. When the sons of God met together, Satan was in the midst of them, Job 1. He meets in congregations, he gets into the closet. When Joshua, the high priest, was ministering before the Lord, Satan stood at his right hand, ready to resist him, Zechariah 3, verse 1. Point two, there needs caution, because in private duties there may be many failings and evils which we are apt to be tainted with in our private addresses to God. Point number one below that, there may be danger of ostentation. Therefore, Christ gives direction here that it should be managed with the greatest secrecy, both as for place, time, and voice. Let none but God be conscious to our drawing aside, that we may be alone. Withdraw yourselves out of the sight and hearing of others, lest pride and ostentation creep upon you. The devil will seek to blast this serious acknowledgement to God one way or other. Subpoint two, there may be customariness for fashion's sake. It is said of Christ that he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day as his custom was. We may use accustomed duties, but we must not do them customarily and for fashion's sake, no more than Christ himself did. For though this was his custom, yet he was not customary in these his synagogue attendances. We are very apt to do so, because we have used it for these many years. Men go on in a tract of duty and regard not the ends or purposes of worship. Zechariah 7, verse 3. They come with a fond scruple and case of conscience to the prophet. That's P-R-O-P-H-E-T. They had an old custom among them to fast for the destruction of the temple. Now, when the temple was built again, should I weep in the fifth month, separating myself, as I have done these so many years? Subpoint three, much slightness and perfunctoriness of heart you may be guilty of. Such is the wickedness of men that they think God will be put off with anything. And though they would set off themselves with applause in the hearing of others, yet how slight are they apt to be when they deal with God alone? Consider, you must sanctify the name of God in private as well as in public. You must speak to God with reverence and fear, and not in an overly fashion. Take heed of this slightness. It is a great wrong to the majesty of God. When they offered a sickly offering, said God, I am a great king, and my name is dreadful among the heathen. You do not consider my majesty. So I believe he's saying, don't be too casual with God. Subpoint four, there may be this evil, resting in the work in the tale and number of your prayers. Luke 18, verse 12, I fast twice in the week. Man is very apt to rest and dote upon his own worth and to build all his acceptance with God upon it, to come to God and challenge him for a debt, as the Pharisee did. It is very natural to rest in those duties and make them an excuse for other things. We can say, oh, but we're praying, and then that gives us excuse to sin, or to just to basically say, look, God, I pray, so why don't you owe me something, essentially? And subpoint number five, there may be pride even in the exercise of our gifts. There is a delight in duties which seems spiritual many times when it is not, as when a man delights in the exercise of his own gifts rather than in communion with God. When there is a secret tickling of heart with a conceit or conception of our own worth, as when in the carriage of a duty we are off roundly and parts or abilities have their free course in career, this complacency and pride, it may be not only in public, where we have advantage to discover ourselves with applause, but in private, between God and our souls. When a man is conceited of his gifts, they may end in the private exercise of them to the wrong of God. When invention is quick and free, he may have such a delight as may make him rest in the work, as it is a fruit of parts or abilities, rather than a means of communion with God. Therefore, there needs a great deal of caution when we are alone with our Heavenly Father. All right, that brings us to the end of the application section, and actually brings us to the end of the this first part of the introduction to the Lord's Prayer, which was verse 6. And then he goes on to verses 7 and 8. But we are going to go ahead and stop there for this time, and then, Lord willing, continue on with that the next time. But until then, go seeking God to grant you that desire to be alone with him, in communion with him, in his special presence in prayer before the throne of grace. May we do so with reverence, and may we do so with a proper heart. We pray that he grant us that. May we do so often, and may we be diligent in these things. And we pray he hears our prayers, and we thank him that he does, and for his condescension that the great God, Almighty God of the universe, should actually listen to us, even sinners. But he does so through Christ. And may we be thankful to the Lord Christ for his works, who he is, what he's done, and the granting of the opportunity to come to God, and through his Spirit who helps our infirmities. And again, may we be thankful and often in this duty. And Lord willing, we will talk to you again soon.